moon's riding high. Ah, but here's the danger. It may only shine for us this way one time. Star and wind and weather, look at us and plead, please get together. Come lucky lad, take this lucky pass, for we only pass this way one time. Lucky lad, take this willing glass, for we only pass this way one time.
But you'll be coming back to the Big Band and More next week at the same time. I'm sure you will, unlike Finney in there. Okay, thanks very much, Joe, for the great Big Band and More show this morning. Continuing on into the afternoon, it's 1 o'clock now and time for the new WHFR Journal, our public affairs show, in which we ask the question, what's the most important thing for you? Well, of course, we have the answer. What is right next door? So the new WHFR Journal starts right now. Hello and welcome to another edition of the new WHFR Journal, our public affairs show from our radio station here at Henry Ford Community College. We are a non-commercial, educational, and independent public radio station here for serving you for 25 years, in fact. 25 years, yay! My name is Jay Koronik, and along with me today is our news director, Amy Powers, and our news reporter extraordinaire, Dennis Reimar. So how are you guys doing today? Amy, what's happening for you?
Let's see. Well, actually, I don't want to go right into the news. I was just looking at the jobs going and begging, but I'm just fine. Glad to be here.
Okay. And Dennis, you were out at the farmer's market this morning.
Well,
a lot of people out there.
That's what the news reporter extraordinaire does.
He was on location.
I was on location. I did a remote feed, if you will. Mm-hmm. I was really pleasantly surprised because it was hot, it was humid, and the place was off the hook busy. I'm not exaggerating when I tell you that there were just a lot of people. And this was between 10:30 and 11. Right about the time I went, I called in, was about the time that all the local trucks decided to come through, as well as three or four planes wanted to land. So it was,
they have a steady stream of trucks coming through.
No, it's like they're looking for me. As soon as I get out of my head, they like watch me and they say, I think he's going to want to talk on the radio. So let's, and they rev up their engines a little. You could see him looking at me and kind of smiling. Does that sound like I have a conspiracy here?
Well, a little.
Yeah, we weren't that interested in hearing about what your reporter's technical problems were. But
I think that some of the listeners might be. No, actually, and I got a chance to talk.
Did you see any candidates for public office campaigning out there?
He always goes right for that, doesn't he? Mm-hmm. No, I did not. Nobody was campaigning.
I guess they don't want to win an election then, or they think that by name recognition alone, they're just going to slide in the August 3rd primary.
I think they're just shy. I think that people in public office are just have a tendency to be shy. No, there was nobody that I could see, but again, I was fighting heat, humidity, planes, and trucks. I had a chance to speak with our wonderful vice president of finance, Marge Swan, who was, like you were talking about, she was she was in the tent, how HFCC is going green, and she was kind of headlining that campaign. Pretty cool stuff.
That's right. We have an alternative energy program and also an alternative energy certificate. That's sort of just an introduction to the basic concepts of energy other than oil, okay, and coal. We've depended on them for a long time, and even though we have coal in this country, it's not clean coal. There's really no such thing. And, of course, we know about the oil resources and how difficult it is to find them and what hazards there are in reclaiming the oil. Of course, what is it, day 70-something that the spill is still gushing out down there in the Gulf Coast? Too bad.
Well, they were all about renewable. That was pretty cool.
Okay, yesterday, folks, the Wayne County Commission met right here in Dearborn. Yeah, at Dearborn City Hall. And wasn't that exciting? Usually they meet at the Guardian Building in downtown Detroit. We could not get over there. And one of the reasons, this irks me to no end, Gary Warrenchuk, who is our area 13th District commissioner, that 13th District for the county, is Allen Park, Dearborn, and Melvindale. He sent his flyer. Actually, it's a little newsletter. But on the cover of the newsletter is, oh boy, we're going to be in Dearborn on Thursday. Oh, wait a minute, it's the next Thursday. Oh, that's good.
Okay.
I thought, sure, it said yesterday the 8th. Okay, well, good, we got time, so maybe we'll send Dennis over there, who knows. But one of the problems I usually get with the newspapers and commissioners, and I jump to conclusions here, or jump to contusions, if you will, because usually they notify you at the last minute. Mm-hmm. And also because this was in the paper this week. And I'm thinking, oh, my God, the paper comes out on Wednesday and the event's Thursday. And a lot of people don't even open the paper to the weekend if they get it at all. But it looks like this is next week.
But in your defense, we did look at something that was dated yesterday. I know we did. I know it wasn't this particular thing. Anyway, so...
Well, I'm grabbing the paper cuckoo. Now. It's July 15th. There it is in the Dearborn Press and Guide from this last Wednesday. So, folks, if you actually want to attend a meeting, I'm not saying it's going to be exciting, and I don't know how long it's going to last. It's probably just a regular business meeting. It's not there might be a chance, it looks like here, for the public to make comments at the end, but don't expect much time for that. That's not the idea. You just see the commission do its work. Keep those roads repaired, keep that sewer water flowing or whatever. They have some, they also run Metro Airport, so that's a big deal, I guess, a big expense at times. So if you want to see that, it starts at 10 a.m. next week, Thursday. So good for Warrenchuk and the Dearborn Papers. They got it in more than a week ahead. So there is time if you want to get there. One of the things in his newsletter, and I didn't... Yes, I do have it. And this is important for all Wayne County residents too. They have moved to the Griswold Building, and it happened just earlier this year. Gary Warrenchuk's office is on the 7th floor. That's probably a beautiful scenic view of what's left of downtown Detroit. But in any event, the Wayne County Commission and the county administration moved earlier this year from the old Wayne County building into the Guardian Building, an historic 40-story skyscraper. Oh, Gary didn't get on the 40th floor, too bad. Located at Griswold and Congress in downtown Detroit. The county purchased the whole Guardian Building for its offices after having leased the old Wayne County building for many years at a cost of more than $5 million a year. I doesn't say what they paid here, but the Guardian Building opened in 1929 and was designated as a National Historic Landmark in 1989. They also think, the county offices will occupy 15 floors of the building and the rest of the building, maybe the higher levels with the beautiful view, where you can't see, you know, the homeless on the streets from the 40th floor, probably. The rest of the building has tenants who are expected to generate $2 million in annual rent income for the county. So that will go towards whatever they had to pay for the building. It doesn't say, interestingly, how much. But they previously, they had to pay more than $5 million a year to lease their space in the old Wayne County building. It's interesting. That was called the old Wayne County building, but the county didn't own it.
Amazing.
Yeah, it doesn't make sense to me that what's going on there, but that's weird. But so it does seem like that they're breaking even, and they've got a building, and they can generate some revenue. Plus, historic landmark. From what I remember, the Griswold Building. In fact, I'm trying to remember when I was very young, my parents, of course, when Detroit existed, with a lot of businesses and facilities, we used to go downtown a lot, of course, I know I went in the Griswold building many times, the Guardian building at Griswold and Congress, and beautiful building, certainly, as was our train station, where I actually took many trains from when I was young in the 50s. Beautiful, small, not like the railroad station in Chicago, but a very lovely, beautiful place, and of course now it's a derelict death trap, whatever, but I guess, what's the latest news on that? Remember that the city of Detroit is actually going to use that property for a police station, police headquarters?
I don't know if that's definitive. They were certainly pursuing that.
Yeah, if they have any money.
Private investors have looked at it as well.
For a long, long, long time. And it's so beautiful.
Oh, it is.
Well, I don't know if they... It's a bit of an artist's haven. Normally, in order to save it, they'll have to probably raise it. In other words, to save that... there's just too many things that are not standard anymore.
Absolutely.
And the plumbing and piping and all that to go
if
back
that's
and,
left in there.
And retrofit. Yes, anything that was worth anything has already been removed. And not by the public, by thieves. Okay. Kind of nice, too, from Gary Warrenchuk's newsletter here from about Wayne County government. As part of their initiative, he's added a link to his webpage. And you have to get there through WayneCounty.com. And you click on Wayne County Commission under the My Government heading. Okay, so WayneCounty.com, My Government, Wayne County Commission, then you click on District 13. Luckily, you know, lucky number 13, that's Gary Warrenchuk's district. Okay, and then he's got a link, and it's interesting to me, why isn't it a link from the webpage of the County Commission? But he put a link there that'll tell residents the expenditures made by his office. So how did Gary spend money? I assume there must be a link for the whole budget, but maybe not. Maybe they keep that secret. But I would think that kind of transparency, and they call it a capital T, Transparency in Wayne County Government Initiative, is a really good thing. Although I have to say, I remember getting the full copy of the City of Dearborn's budget, 17 pages printed out from last May. And the problem is, it's very hard to figure out. I mean, hundreds of thousands here, millions there. What are these things? There's just like three or four words to describe them. Could be anything. And you don't know who the contract was awarded to or the necessity for it or prioritization or, you know, I mean, so just looking at the budget, I mean, go ahead, play accountant and add up and subtract and see if it comes out right. But other than that, you can't really understand whether or not some of the costs are valid or not, whether or not you'd vote for them or not. Mm. Without knowing a lot more details, and that's not available with the City of Dearborn budget, but good for them in making the file available anyway.
Is it available at all? In other words, could you get access to something that would have those details?
You probably not directly by clicking on a website, but you'd have to go probably to the city clerk's office and
right.
or the city treasurer's office, and I would think there'd be public information.
Probably
to give you those
a couple
more
bucks
details.
For the copies or whatever.
Something a news reporter extraordinaire should
that's kind of what I was, I mean,
be able to dig
I
up.
I was honest. It's, yeah, thanks for bringing that up. I was actually headed in that direction. Is that something that we could go there? And I don't think you'd have to work for WHFR. So if any listeners want to, just kidding.
I think transparency in government is a wonderful thing if it'll ever happen.
If it's real, right?
If it's real and if it goes far enough,
yeah.
You know, into the details.
Let's test this. I'll see you guys in a little bit.
Yeah, what are news people for anyway? In fact, that goes to another story we might bring up later.
Very good.
Actually, the editorial in the Press and Guide this week, or the Times Herald, whatever. Anyway, we'll get to that later. But that's good. Thank you, Gary, for letting us know. And, of course, as we've known a while, that the Wayne County Commissioners unanimously passed a resolution in the spring to lock in a 10% salary reduction for themselves. But then you read down later, and we did find this out before, they had to. Mm-hmm. Because the county charter does not allow salary adjustments in the middle of... because state officials took a 10% cut in 2011 or intending to in 2011. So the county ordinance already ties county officials' pay to the elected state officials. So they really had to do it, but then they made it official by passing a resolution. Now, some of them, including Gary, opted to start receiving or giving back 10% of their salary already.
Cool.
And not all of them, though. That's interesting. Not all of them. Yeah. Oh, I'm going to wait till the last minute until January when I have to take 10% reduction. So, although I can understand if your pay is going to be reduced that much, that they give you some time to sort of plan ahead, like pay off some bills or something maybe, or shift some debts around or something. But in any event, good for Gary. We knew this before, but he had to put it in a newsletter because, you know, election time coming up. And that's it. That's the report from Wayne County Commissioner Gary Warrenchuk directly. Also, because it came to everybody in these three districts in your mail this week, there was a, as he always has, a poll there, a opinion poll, also not official, not a random sample, but still, it's a poll. If you want to let him know your opinions on issues as he stated them, which is interesting because you can state when you're taking a poll a question in a way that would everybody feels one way or the other, but if they think about it, well, does it have to be that way? Or right. I mean, maybe they're actually against it, but the way you stated it, they come out in favor of it, you know. It's all how you phrase it, and I always have thought that some of his questions were very much leading questions. They would lead you to the answer that he sort of wants you to give. It's very hard, though, Gary, and your advisors may know this, to write a question that is not biased to lead the people one way or the other. It's very hard to do that in an objective way. So people that do these kinds of polls for a living who want objective and valid results, they have to be extremely careful. You got to go to college. You got to study how to do this. I mean, doing an unbiased or a non-leading question poll is very, very hard work to phrase that. And his office hasn't really been on top of it. But nonetheless, I always fill them out and send them in, and they usually send back a postcard saying, thank you very much. But it's an interactive thing that will keep you voting for these officials, too. They know that, whether it's getting you on an email list from their website, which I don't think he has an email list. But any way they can be interactive and have their name in front of your face more often, more guarantees you're going to vote for them again because you feel more buddy-like, which Facebook
even
thing.
Even if there are some slight disagreements. Yeah,
totally.
Just having that
totally,
kind of,
right.
Communication.
Oh, I know the name. I know his face.
Yeah, you feel like you can work out the problem.
Yeah.
That's interesting.
He's there for you.
Yeah.
Right. I mean, just because
sure,
you get
we
email.
Don't agree on everything, but
that's the way it is in life.
Exactly.
He's a Facebook friend of mine, or whatever. That's not going to help folks.
Has Jay friended you on Facebook?
He has. Are you?
No,
you're not really on Facebook, are you?
If anybody asks who's part of WHFR, I will add them to my friend list. But then I don't use Facebook.
I've noticed that. Because I've asked you questions and you never respond.
Facebook. No, I mean, I did discover accidentally last week that 6 months ago, a bunch of people wished me happy birthday.
Yeah.
But I don't know. I didn't know.
I prefer doing that in person.
Check it for 6 months, because I don't believe people should divulge too much of their private life on Facebook. Now, it's a personal thing. It goes against the grain these days, but, I got too many skeletons in the closet.
Oh, boy.
Including my own.
Well, it's a good place, yeah.
Yeah. And I think, skeletons deserve to be hung in the closet anyway, so. Moving on. So take a look for that newsletter. It's called the Summer 2010 County Update from Wayne County Commissioner Gary Warrenchuk if you're in Allen Park, Dearborn, Melvindale. Okay. Moving on then. The farm report. Yeah, come on back next Friday. I thought it was great. Henry Ford Community College, every single paper this week was mentioning about the alternative energy people going to show up at the stand. And in the press and guide, they even used a photograph. I think, how can they take a picture before it happens? It was actually a photo from the first day of the farmer's market. It was the HFCC, when our hospitality people were out there giving samples.
That's right. I saw
Bruce Wall in the background.
That would have been the second week, yeah.
Yeah, the second week, yeah.
The one thing that I did take from that when I spoke with Ms. Swan, with Marge Swan today, they weren't out there so much promoting the wonderful programs that we have here as saying, hey, look, we're practicing what we preach. And they were talking about how HFCC is green. And okay. what we're doing to as far as recycling and things like that. And I think that is just you have to do that. It's
like
almost
what? What were they saying?
Well, we have these great programs here at the school. No, I'm kidding. No, just, I mean, that's a trick question because there were so many different things that they covered. Okay. I mean, we're doing, everything we do is headed in that direction.
Okay.
From
all
the new
individual efforts.
Exactly.
Like changing bulbs.
From the new construction that's going on, because we all know about ongoing construction and remodeling here at the school, to some of the future ways that we're going to be getting our own energy. Sure.
Okay.
So, yeah, to nail me down to a specific thanks. Thanks
oh,
a lot,
sorry
Andy.
About that.
Yeah, it's a little early.
They're going to have those electric car chargers in the parking lot?
Did you hear about that? Every other space. No, I'm really? Kidding. I'm exaggerating.
Well, supposedly the plans were to put them, the lines under the ground, that when they had a need or a request, that they could come and drill down and just make attachments.
Right.
And add those plugs.
But they're basically, they're already thinking ahead to the point where they may need to do this in mass. Yeah, but that's
absolutely.
It's kind of like the whole city of Dearborn is kind of thinking along those lines.
Yep,
I really like that.
I've still got my deposit on my Nissan Leaf.
Okay,
doesn't mean I'm going to get it because I need a car by December, and they may or may not be available in Michigan that soon.
Right,
but they'll be at least a year or more ahead of the Ford Focus Electric, which is a 2012. Now, the 2012 Focus, I just got a brochure in the mail from Ford, is coming out probably as early as January. But that's the gas engine one. The electric version probably won't be available, if we're lucky, at the end of 2011 or early 2012.
It's the Focus that'll be?
It is the 2012 okay. Focus that will be their electric car, not the Fiesta.
Yeah. Oh, okay.
Yep.
I thought it was a Fusion.
No.
All right.
Too big.
Yeah.
Although every car, probably within 20, 30 years, will have an electric option, I would think.
Sure.
They will have to, because gasoline will get so expensive there. It really won't be a price comparison there. And I do think that batteries and so on will give you greater mileage. Now, the Ford car and the Leaf, the Ford Focus electric and the Leaf, Nissan Leaf electric, will only have a range of about 80 to 100 miles. Again, no gas engine, just batteries, and you have to plan ahead to not go further than about 40 miles or so, or watch, they get meters inside the car to tell you about your battery strength, like a gas tank level.
And how long before you can go another 40?
You have to recharge, and the Leaf, if you have a 220-volt charger, which they're requiring, they won't sell you a Leaf unless they have their own experts come out to your house. And you have to, in order to qualify for a Leaf, you have to have an indoor garage.
Right.
And because you got to charge this thing, electricity flowing through the cords. They don't want it to be outside in the bad weather and short out the world. And so it's an extra $2,000-some-odd to have this installed. Now, that charger will recharge the Leaf in about 6 hours, because 220 is, well, more juice than 110, which is the standard outlet. It will charge on 110, but I think it's 8 to 10 hours it'll take. So they want everybody they want to make sure that everybody who buys it agrees to have their own service technicians come out to your house and put a 220 charger in your garage. That way you'll be happier in the long run. Now, even that charger, I mean, the car cost about $30,000, but tax credits bring that down by $6,500.
Wow.
Which you can get back, you know, next year's taxes. And the charger that you put in the garage for $2,000-something, I think they say you can get about half to 80% back on taxes. So both of those prices are not the net price. After a year or so, you will get a lot of credit back. So also you could lease the Leaf for $350 a month, and it's about $30 more for the taxes that they charge on lease deals. So for about $370, you could lease it for 3 years, which, considering there's no cost for gas ever, and electricity overnight, even if you use the car 80 miles every day, would only cost you a fraction of a dollar. It's very economical, therefore, in terms of gasoline.
How long would it take to get from here to Florida?
Well, that's the problem. You know, if you just have a 110 outlet, you need a very long AC power cord and a motel room or something on the ground floor
that will let you today.
put the cord out to the parking lot, you know, so it's an issue.
I think I saw that in a movie once.
I didn't even see that coming. Nice job.
You know, I think the other option would be that there are RV lots for recreational vehicles, mm-hmm. and, you know, you rent a space, and right there on the tree, there's electricity. They got an outlet right on the tree.
Just for 80 miles. It's about 1,000 miles.
Get a little past Toledo, and then you got to charge up again.
For 6 hours.
2 week trip just to get down there.
Oh, I think you're actually being optimistic.
I think so, too.
Yeah. How much vacation time do you have a week?
The initial sale will be like to a second car for people that have a lot of daily driving that's not as far as 80 miles. And then it charges at night, and there's no big drain on the system because nighttime is when electricity is used the least. And that's the time that's perfect for charging up everything.
But you can make money off this deal, according to the mayor. Sell back.
If you have a circuit, and I'm not sure what they're installing is, if it's part of a smart grid circuit, then the batteries, like if you go to work and you charge, like the mayor was saying in their new parking lot facility here, if you have such a car, which is still, you know, a year or two away, but and apparently they are installing a smart grid, and the smart grid circuit will allow the batteries in your car to feed electricity back into the system without necessarily discharging themselves somehow. I don't quite understand how that happens. But so you will get a credit on your electric bill. No matter where your car is parked, it knows that it's your car. And if you're contributing to like a sudden need for electricity during the day in the smart grid, it'll draw from a whole bunch of cars for just a brief period.
Right.
You know? And you won't have a brownout, you won't have shortouts, you know, and right now it's even becoming a problem in Detroit, the Detroit Edison, after several days of heat, all that's supposed to get better in a day or two, is going to charge extra money and start turning off the house's electrical service at times.
It's called completely off. It's not called a brownout.
It's called interruptible power supplies.
Right.
If you install electrical circuit in your house, you give them permission to turn off your power at times, mm-hmm. which is scary. But it'll save you money just to have that installed, and it will only take from your house maybe for a couple minutes here or there whenever it needs to, you know, cut your house out so that there's more power to wherever else it's needed in the grid. So it's not something like, well, my refrigerator is going to defrost and my car won't charge or whatever. It's just brief period. So that's the smart grid that the mayor was talking about, that they're putting those circuits into that parking structure somewhere around City Hall. And it makes a lot of sense. I don't know if the Nissan Leaf charge unit will connect to a smart grid. But anyway, at night, it really, there's not a need for extra power from your car.
No, he's talking about only during peak
during
hours.
The day.
It was at the new parking lot for the new building they're putting, the old Montgomery Wards. I forget, the Midwest Health.
Yeah, it's now called some sort of town center, Dearborn Town Center.
Fairlane
Town Center, Dearborn Town Center.
Yeah, we're confused by the name. Anyway, he said there would be up to 25 of those spots in there, and I thought that was a, that's a lot, isn't it?
But that's nothing compared to how many they're going to need.
And they're going to need, exactly. You know, but forward thinking. I like it.
Yeah.
All right.
Yeah. So, okay, moving on. In the press guide, we can go rather quickly. The press guide from last Sunday, Hakeem Fakhouri did finally sign the development extension for himself to the end of the year.
Yeah.
Remember last time we weren't sure if it was a year extension or just to the end of this year, which effectively is only like 5.5 months away now.
Right.
But that's it. End of this year.
I slept so much better after reading that.
Yeah. We can move on here.
Yeah.
And again, he's not planning to do anything with it at this point. He just wants to have the agreement in effect so it's more easy. More easily can sell it.
Sure.
To somebody else.
And he hasn't disguised that that's his goal. So it's not like, you know, he's doing anything underhanded at all.
No. Yeah, but it's going to be quite a while before there's any development on that property.
No pun intended.
So the sooner somebody gets in there that is serious about developing, the better. And it has a plan. And he has had over 5 years now and hasn't been able to pull any of his plans off. Maybe no fault of his, just bad times. I'm not casting aspersions here. He has tried, but now he's not trying, really, except to sell that property and that agreement. And so we got to move on, I think.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. HFCC graduates are very successful, according to a survey. 4 out of 5, it says here, graduates get a new job or promotion because of their degree, according to data gathered by the college. So always be suspicious, folks. And, of course, the opinions expressed here are not necessarily those of anyone here at Henry Ford Community College, even though that's what's stated here in this article. Just, you know, critical thinking, folks. If somebody gathers information and it turns out favorable towards themselves, you have to be a little suspicious. You know, again, like we talked about Gary Warrenchuk and leading questions. Also, this is not a representative sample. Okay, they did survey all 1,800 graduates from class of 2008-2009, which is a difficult time to find a job, certainly, the beginning of the crash. Okay, so that means in that whole year, but especially last summer, I guess, 2009, when they graduated, a year ago. But only 225 responded. And, of course, in my weird way of thinking, I'm thinking that the other folks who didn't have a job couldn't afford a stamp to send the survey back. Or had to move out of state and didn't respond. So maybe they found a job and not. But there is no doubt, the more education, the more training you have in one area or another, and certainly jobs are a little bit more plentiful in some areas than other areas, but it all depends how you search for them, how you interview, how well you interview, and so on. And a lot of variables here. But I always felt at 40 years full-time here and still continuing, can't get rid of me that easily, with the radio station, that we have high quality, high standards, a wide variety of classes. And nobody told me to say this, folks. I've been, you know, in fact, somebody asked me the other day, 40 years full-time at the college, how could you ever stay there that long? I said, I like the place.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Okay, as a teacher.
You can't do anything for this long and not enjoy it. I mean, reasonably intelligent. Yeah,
I'm very proud of all of my colleagues, and most all of them. There's always some exceptions. But most all of them work very, very hard, keep up to date on the latest issues. And we always have new classes that are being developed and new facilities on campus, state-of-the-art culinary arts program right here in the Student Center building. Boy, those kitchens, I wish I had one of those at home.
We have a presence at the Farmers and Artisans Market every week.
Yeah, they help sponsor that. We do a lot of, the college does a lot of things for the community too, of course. Sure. So I don't doubt that a high percentage of the graduates, including more than the 225 that responded, are able to find jobs. Now, whether or not it's 80%,
but doesn't that
find jobs?
Because the headline says one thing, but doesn't that first sentence say 4 out of 5 of the people that responded?
That's right.
That's okay. That's key.
Yeah, 80% of those responding, and again, the bad joke, but there's a lot of qualifiers why those other 1,600 almost did not respond.
Right.
Again, out of work, no money. I wonder if it was a postage paid envelope.
I think they're busy working.
Because people don't respond to surveys coming through the mail much at all. If they got to put their own stamp on the envelope, although I warn you, Gary Warrenchuk's survey required a stamp.
And you stepped up, didn't you?
Well, of course. I'm not gonna get my opinion. Keep my opinion to myself.
I don't care what it costs me. Yeah, 44 cents.
Yeah, gonna go up to 46 probably. But okay, so students are taking more credit hours, and to mention that enrollment for this September is up 14% already from last year. So we've been double digit increases. Good thing those. Awesome. North parking lots are going to be finished by fall. We might even be pushing 20,000 students. The campus was designed originally for about 14,000.
Really?
And we've expanded with extra buildings and more parking lots, of course. But we were busting at the seams last year with 18,000 in the fall and winter. And at 14% more, and who knows, by the time that it starts in third week in August, we may be up to 20% again, because tuition is relatively low.
Right.
We have a wide variety of programs. And, of course, you can transfer most everything here. If you're just starting out, besides the one- and two-year certificate programs that are complete unto themselves in some areas, you could transfer from here to somewhere else who's bound to charge you a little more. So that's just logical. But we do have a good reputation, and I think deservedly so. So you'll get a good education if you come here. We've got to tell our listeners, if you want classes for academic credit or job changing, a new career path, or even life enrichment, they're filling up so quickly. Mm-hmm. You better consider getting in touch with a counselor, or getting enrolled, getting admitted first, and then enrolled if you're not, you haven't been here before, because classes are filling up very, very fast. We even stopped promoting spring enrollment, which started in May and ended a couple weeks ago in April. Because all the classes were filled. There was like one or two little seats, and all the classes were, and it's getting very crowded. So if you know anybody, or yourself, you're considering classes here at Henry Ford Community College, better come quick. Sign up quick. Maybe there's some sort of way to postpone paying the final bill. I don't know, but sometimes they have a way that they give you a few weeks or months to pay the final cost. No. Okay.
I don't know either. I just went and played rock, paper, scissors. I won the game until the end of the week. Okay. Done. No, and there's a lot of non-traditional students that are in situations that they're reinventing themselves too. So that's, yeah, I think that's adding to the mix here.
We're going to pause here on the new WHFR Journal, Local News and Alternative Views, with Jay, Amy, and Dennis, and listen to Jim Hightower. Two comments of his about, well, first of all, soccer socialism. Yeah, it's an anti-Glenn Beck thing, but that's so easy to do, isn't it, I think? he's so over the top. I bet a bunch of conservatives are unhappy with him. But this is, it's just clever enough that I thought you'd want to hear about Glenn Beck's rant against soccer as being socialist conspiracy. Hmm. And I played soccer in high school.
Well, there 1950s. You go, then. Yeah. There you have it.
And I liked it. I thought it was fun. Yeah. And we were the only high school in Wayne County to have soccer.
Really? Where'd you go?
Flat Rock.
Flat Rock.
Not known for
its soccer mecca, sure.
Yeah, not knowing for really anything. Yeah. We had, in those days, in the 50s and early 60s, we were Class B high school, not as big as Class A. And we had some state champion baseball teams. We went to baseball. In fact, the Tigers even got one of a Flat Rock High School graduates, Fred Gladding, for the old timers. He was just a pitcher, and he was so fat.
Just a pitcher.
Not just a pitcher.
Yeah, he was so fat he couldn't run. He couldn't hit, but he was good on the mound.
And Babe Ruth was overweight also.
And he chewed all the tobacco and spit a lot. He was a disgusting guy.
He was a
fun guy,
Fred,
I guess.
Fred, we miss you.
Yeah, I don't know where he is now, but whatever happened to Fred Gladding. But he came for Flat Rock, and that's all the claim to fame for Flat Rock High School. But we had soccer.
Plus you had Jay Cornick.
Yeah, and we didn't have Glenn Beck to criticize us. Take a listen to this, folks. Turn up your radios, because here comes Jim Hightower, our favorite national populist.
You know what's wrong with America? I'll tell you what's wrong. Soccer. Yes, soccer. Or, as the rest of the world calls it, football. But we know what real football is, and it's not soccer. What soccer is foreign, and therefore un-American. No less of a cultural authority than Glenn Beck has seen this clearly and is leading the red, white, and blue Real America charge against this invasive sport. Fox TV's right-wing pontificator recently decried media coverage of soccer's World Championship playoffs, now underway in South Africa. "It doesn't matter how you try to sell it to us," Beck barked. "We don't want the World Cup. We don't like the World Cup. We don't like soccer. We want nothing to do with it." You see, Glenn and a host of other right-wing ideologues have determined that the intrusion of soccer into our country is a leftist plot to turn Americans into socialists. "The left is pushing it in schools across the country," wailed one of these chicken littles. "Soccer is designed as a poor man or poor woman's sport," warned another, declaring that it is a precursor to the, quote, "Browning of America." But gosh, guys, soccer's popularity has sprung from conservative, middle-class suburbs, not from secret socialist cells at Harvard. Also, here's something that'll cause Glenn to grind his teeth. The biggest media pusher of soccer in the U.S. has been Beck's own boss and fellow right-winger, Rupert Murdoch. Rupert's Fox broadcast empire covers more of the games than any other network. This is Jim Hightower saying, Glenn and his commentating cohorts have gone bull goose goofy. Besides, they're too late to stop the invasion. If soccer is socialist, well, then so is America. More American kids under 12 now play soccer than play baseball, football, and basketball combined. In fact, America already has more registered soccer players than any other country, and the World Cup is creating more fans every single day.
Today's commentary is underwritten by Wiley & Sons, publishers of Hightower's new book titled Swim Against the Current. Even a dead fish can go with the flow. Now available wherever books are sold.
Republican Congress critters have once again stomped on the fingers of out-of-work Americans who are clinging to unemployment aid to keep from tumbling into the depths of poverty. Every single Republican senator recently locked arms to block consideration of a $33 billion bill to extend unemployment benefits to those who have been without work for more than 6 months, at which point their jobless payments expire. Long-term joblessness is now at the highest rate since the Great Depression, and the Republicans' cold recalcitrance means more than a million Americans will now lose even the meager weekly payments that have kept them hanging on in today's jobless economy. And another 200,000 workers will join them every week. Too costly, grump the GOP senators. They've suddenly turned into budget skinflints after approving trillions of dollars to bail out Wall Street fat cats who caused today's economic mess and while continuing to shell out $12 billion a month for nation building in Afghanistan. Adding insult to economic injury, the Repubs have taken to dissing out-of-work Americans as unworthy of a helping hand. We should not be giving cash to people who basically are just going to blow it on drugs, sniffed Senator Orrin Hatch. Senator John Kyle complained that $300 a week jobless payments are a, quote, disincentive for them to seek new work. Representative Dean Heller worries that the payments are, quote, creating hobos. And Sharon Angle, a GOP teabag candidate for Senate, declares that unemployment benefits, quote, really have spoiled our citizenry. This is Jim Hightower saying, what a disgrace. It's these privileged lawmakers who are spoiled. Spoiled so rotten they can't even smell the hypocrisy of showering tax dollars on the moneyed elites, then piously turning their backs on America's grassroots folks in a time of real need.
Today's commentary is underwritten by Wiley & Sons, publishers of Hightower's new book titled Swim Against the Current, Even a Dead Fish Can Go with the Flow. Now available wherever books are sold.
As you just mentioned, as a follow-up about the editorial from Jim Hightower that we just heard, the stomping on America's workers, is that most of those unemployment benefits that have not been extended, the majority of them would go to out-of-work people here in Michigan. So that is more than a national issue. It's a rather personal state issue, too. And some of the things that are, there were some of the quotes there, obviously, just sort of cherry-picking from Republican senators. You wonder how these people, or what world they're living in, how they can say things that are so, well, not to be nasty, unintelligent, uninformed. You know, this money is not going to be spent on drugs, folks. These people, the vast majority of these people, need money to live on for rent and for food. And come on, you know, that's just unfair to stereotype people who are out of work as, number one, being lazy, and number two, being on drugs. That's just not the case for the majority, and dare I say, probably the vast majority. Well, I mean, I know some out-of-work people. What about Amy and Dennis? Are they lazy? Are they on drugs?
Do we have to...
Illegal drugs.
I mean, are you going like, to...
You don't have to mention any names.
I mean, you're going to bring it out now?
No.
I thought you brought up a good point, though. It is money that goes to almost instantly, back into the community.
Yeah,
you know?
It's less than what they're used to. A big percentage less. And like Jay said, you have your mortgage or rent or whatever. You have food. I mean, these are food anyway is a daily expense. Sure, yeah. Basic
it's,
needs.
The answer to the problem lies in generating jobs. And maybe that'll take a bunch more stimulus money. I know. We're already deeply in debt as a country. But how are you going to get more jobs out there? In fact, there are a lot of businesses, and we have an article sitting somewhere here. We have a news desk at WHFR right now, and the news stories are littered with news. So all the news we have chance to talk about, and one of the points, and I think it was actually this morning, Friedman from the New York Times, he mentioned that I just don't see it right now. There
one
it
of
is.
These?
Yeah. No, is that his editorial on economics from this morning's New York Times, and he's, you know, a Nobel Prize winning economist, and he's one of the people that felt the stimulus money from the federal level was just not high enough. We're not doing enough to create jobs. The other point is that most of these most of these, the business situation, is that they're not hiring right now, but they've got the capacity. They've just, you know, closed down parts of their operation. They're not building more space because they're not using all of it. People are starting to buy a little more, but what's going to get them to hire more people back is more people buying, probably, and therefore, how do you get money to the people, you know, rather than money to the businesses? Mm-hmm. You say, well, cut taxes for them. Yeah, but if they don't really feel that more people are going to buy, they're not going to build, they're not going to hire more people. You know, it doesn't work that in business. It's not a Field of Dreams thing, like you build a baseball stadium and they will come.
And cutting back somebody's source of income, even if it is unemployment, that's not helping. That's
no, especially
counterproductive.
Especially since they don't have any money for health care, usually.
Exactly.
Because we don't have national health care, folks, you know, and if you're out of work, you especially don't have health care, not guaranteed by the government for everybody anyway. So we're still got a ways to go there. Okay, Dennis, you had a hot story. It's right off the web, though. I think that's weird, hot enough.
If you ask me, it's a web exclusive, pressandguide.com from Sean Delaney. And just really quick, bear with me here. On March 10th, there was an incident involving a 61-year-old Dearborn Heights gentleman named Joseph Saad. And apparently on that day, he had rolled through a stop sign less than 100 feet from his home. Now, it says his home was actually in Dearborn, but the Dearborn Heights police were following him. Anyway, he was at his home in Dearborn, and he gets to his driveway, and there's a cop already in the driveway. And the cop said that he told him that he rolled through the stop sign. So Mr. Saad says, well, he was standing near the door, and according to the lawsuit, he said, well, I'm going to go in the house and get my wallet. And the cop said, you better not go through that door or I'll shoot you. That's a quote. The Dearborn Heights resident, and again, says his Saad's was at Ford Road and Telegraph in Dearborn, but it says he's a Dearborn Heights resident, and they were Dearborn Heights police. He said that he panicked. He went in the house screaming, the police are going to shoot me. His parents came out. Eventually, the police officer drew his gun, and then the lawsuit says that the Dearborn Heights policeman summoned other policemen who surrounded the home with guns drawn, police, dogs, and they all went in without a warrant, without any consent or probable cause. That's what this says. And according, and I'll just read the headline of the web exclusive, the suit contends pressure on Dearborn Heights police to write tickets has led to abuses. So what they're saying is he rode through a stop sign, and they're so hungry for that. How much is it to roll through a stop sign? $100? $200? Okay. $200. They needed that so badly that they were willing to basically go into his house without cause or a search warrant. That's what the lawsuit says.
And folks, that comes from the man who had been charged. That's his version of the story.
We don't have
here in the story the Dearborn Heights police version. Very often police are unwilling to comment about the details of how things happened, especially if a suit has just been filed.
Right. They definitely have not. They declined. You're exactly right. And ultimately what they want is that certain laws to be changed in not only the city of Dearborn Heights, but the city of Dearborn, because even though Dearborn police were not at the location and they were not part of these alleged abuses, their laws are such that it caused this problem. And in addition to some of the changes, they also want $5 million to compensate for their personal anguish.
Well, yeah. I would say, folks, just as a cautionary note, if a policeman is asking you to do something and he's got his gun out, don't even try to run away.
No.
I mean, that's definitely a sign to them, like you might be guilty of something horrendous, like maybe you're going for your gun in your house or something.
They have
no idea
what you're going for.
I can fantasize. I can imagine, although again, I'm just making it up here, why the cops might call a few more in.
Sure.
and then following a suspect after a commission of a crime, even though it's just a traffic crime, minor crime. They have the right to follow them, just like they can follow the car. A person gets out of the car, they can run after them. They go into a building, you can follow them in the building. So I think even if they had that extraordinary response, I don't understand why they pulled the gun out if they did.
It's allegedly,
For just a traffic offense. I mean, how old was this person?
61. 60? And his mom was 78.
Were they profiling him or something?
Interesting. And the attorney involved for the Saads, he's calling the idea of giving people tickets, writing tickets, and getting revenue from this. He's calling this an unconstitutional commercial enterprise.
Yeah. Well, it's always been a cash cow for cities to give in metro areas to give not just traffic tickets for so-called moving violations, but also parking tickets. Remember in the Dearborn budget, I found that one item.
$100,000.
For parking tickets alone.
That was part of the, that
so
was
speeding part of, tickets. Right. Oh my gosh, you know, that's got to be more costly, I think, than a parking ticket. So Dearborn is making hundreds of thousands of dollars probably on that. And no doubt Dearborn Heights, they've got, you know, beautiful Ford Road running through there and some other busy streets. So they can make a profit on that. Is it fair? Is it a correct way to do it? Sure, these people are breaking the law, but as we all know, the majority of traffic flow on a good day is actually faster than the speed limit. Are cars safe at 5 or 10 or 15 miles over the speed limit? Generally, yes. Now, in a residential area where there's little kids that can just run out for a second or something and you can't see them from behind a tree, or they're behind a tree initially or a parked car, no, it's not. That's, you know, but I'm talking about on a regular, well-traveled highway where you have some visibility. You know, it used to be said when I was young, oh, cars can't go over 65 because you're going to die. You can't stop. They're going to explode. You can't turn a corner. It used to be even signs on the expressway. This is how old I am. That would say, ooh, the expressway, there's a curve coming up. You got to slow to 45 miles an hour. Give me a break, you know, because they didn't bank the curve properly. This is a Pennsylvania Turnpike in the olden days. They didn't bank the curve on an expressway. It's just flat. So if you're going 70 on there, whoa, you feel this pull of centrifugal force to the outside, you know, while you're trying to keep your car under control. But highways are properly designed these days. Cars are actually so much safer and more capable in terms of braking and steering and so on than they were 20, 30, or 50 years ago in my case, that you know, the speeds have no relation to anything. And, you know, in Germany, they have unlimited speed expressways, autobahns. And it's true, you don't want to be in the fastest speed lane because that's only
You'll
where the Ferraris go. Yeah, 110 or 120 miles an hour is typical. Boy, wouldn't that be fun? Wow. But it's relatively safe because the only cars that can go that fast are more than designed for it, and the highways are designed for that too. Although typically, I think England has unlimited speed highways, expressways too, but there's so much traffic, you never get above 50. So
one of the things in this, you bring this up, in the lawsuit, the lawsuit claims that the city has artificially set its speed limits too low.
Mm-hmm.
And that's they failed to conduct speed studies using the number of access points such as driveways and cross streets in order to set its speed limits.
Well, Ford Road changes abruptly when you get from Dearborn to Dearborn Heights. It drops like 10 miles an hour.
Well, it goes from 50 to 45 and then 45 to 40.
Right.
Right.
Yeah. Right, and it's all very quick within a couple blocks there.
Absolutely.
And so that's where they hide out. You know, a lot of students on the way to the college here, either coming in from the west or more typically going west on Ford Road, they get hit. As soon as the signs change, they have that flashing light in their rear mirror. So that's unfortunate. It shouldn't happen that way. There's a lot of things I could say about traffic laws
sure.
that are just ways to generate funds for local government and shouldn't happen that way, that our highways would be much safer if they would enforce traffic violations of like reckless driving, which may be harder to prove in court, but
right.
If you see that, you know, swerving in and out, cutting people off, brake lights coming on, you know, there's all kinds of things that need to be prevented. I don't know how I feel about spot checks for alcohol and so on. You know, certainly in rush hour times, that's more dangerous than not to close down a lane and put a sniffer at people's mouths.
But generally,
I've only heard of that in Massachusetts.
I've heard of it, but I've heard it on like holiday
Christmas,
weekends here.
Yeah, holidays.
Oh.
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
So it wouldn't necessarily be rush hour, but you know, during a holiday, everything's rush hour if you're on 75. You know what I mean? It's pretty. Anyway, back to this side guy. It's over with. We'll our crack news team here will keep up with this. Everything that I just read to you was what was alleged in the lawsuit, by, like Jay said, by the.
Victim.
Person, yeah.
The issue we're raising, folks, is as listeners, you should be aware that most of the enforcement of traffic laws is to generate money for the cities.
Mm-hmm.
It's not necessarily people that are doing anything truly unsafe.
Right, but it's also not doesn't necessitate pulling a gun and telling somebody they can't go in their house.
Doesn't.
But it does beg the question, why didn't he have his license and information on him?
Ooh. Mm-hmm. You know, good question.
You don't have your papers. You can't.
That's why you're the news director.
Be out there. Wow. Moving on. Okay. We're a positive thing, I guess. We always talk here about the movies that are shooting in Michigan. And I think in general, my opinion is it's good to have that big tax incentive. But it's a huge one, folks, that our state is paying to filmmakers to come here and shoot here. Last I heard, it was 60% tax credit within a year. And I don't know if it's really still that high, but we're close to being the biggest rebate in the country in any state. And so any production wants to come here. And this is Scream 4 that did some shooting in Dearborn at Woodworth. Is that a middle school?
Middle school.
Yep. They made it seem like a high school. They put.
It's gorgeous. It's a real big building. Yeah. And it has a tower with a bell. Pretty cool.
That's I think always been part of every Scream High School in the past. I saw all the other Scream 1, 2, and 3 movies. Yeah, well, this one apparently is not directed by.
No, it is. Wes Craven.
Wes Craven?
Sure.
Oh, okay. I didn't read that.
Spotted in Northville.
Ooh.
Yeah, I saw my.
Well, I think the director has to be around when they're shooting. Although, no, it's not necessarily true. They do a lot of second team shooting.
Absolutely.
They have production crews where they don't need the director, and they just to save time. They put their assistant director or someone else in charge of the team, and they go out and they shoot a special effect or a car chase or something. And the big time director, and I think Wes Craven is one of the greatest directors. Certainly, he's known for horror films, and he just has had no success with one or two films that weren't in the horror genre. But it's too bad. But former English teacher. Yes,
really?
He was.
Not surprising.
He left teaching high school in his late 20s and started writing horror scripts. No, he was out in Oregon or Washington State.
Really?
As an English teacher, yeah. But so it's possible to switch careers late in life. And he did, actually. That's pretty late. I mean, almost 30. So,
yeah.
Present company accepted here.
Pretty daring.
Yeah, wow. What do you want to do?
What do you want to do? We have to say that coming up at 2 o'clock is our Highway 61 Blues show with Joanne Korczynska, so you want to stay tuned for that. That's only about 5.5 minutes away. And Joanne is back from her vacation last week. Maybe she'll tell you about being up north in Michigan. So we expect to see her in a few minutes here. State survey in Dearborn Press and Guide from this last Wednesday shows support for non-smoking ban. So all the non-smokers got out there and took the survey.
Yeah.
And
that's what, yeah. Interesting.
Of all the non-smokers surveyed.
Yeah. All the non-smokers, they're all in favor.
It is confusing a little bit right now because every time I walk into a restaurant, I expect them to ask smoking or not.
Oh, absolutely.
And they just start to stare at you, and they don't even know what to, say, which is how many.
Yeah, now it is.
Are you dining with? You know, and so.
Well, you know that U of M Dearborn next door went smoke free July 1st. I don't know if you knew that, but they are the entire campus. That question is still being played out here. Do you know that?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
And then from what I understand,
I think. Well, we've been non-smoking at Henry Ford Community College for many, many years.
You're talking about indoors.
Indoors, yeah. Right? And out and about is another question. And U of MD has been a little slower to get some of the regulations in place that we already have.
So. Right. Well, yeah, you're right. Yeah. We have 50 feet from any door. You cannot smoke. Right now. I mean, is it enforced? Is it upheld? I don't know. I don't smoke anymore, I'm proud to say.
Well, I think what it needs to be, a lot of laws that we have, regulations, they're enforced, and even Mayor O'Reilly said this too at times about this or that law, is that we enforce them when they need to be, such as, for example, how high is the grass?
Right.
Is it above those 6 inches? Well, some people think, well, if it's 7 inches, they got to give them a ticket. They got to throw them in jail.
Right. You know?
Well, that's a little being overly tense for a blade of grass that is helping to purify the air and remove toxins. You know, cutting it down makes it less effective in improving our air quality, folks. I mean, how many of you have planted a tree this year? If everybody would plant one tree and water it, we would be a lot better off. And the same thing goes with grass. And especially this time of year, grass should be allowed to get much taller, 6 inches, 8 inches, and keep it higher. Yeah, I know the mowers usually, most mowers will not cut any higher than about 2 3/4 inches, although I have a mulching mower that cuts at 4 4.5, and so I set it all the way up for that. And in fact, mulching, which means it's going to sort of grind up the grass a little bit smaller, the grass particles, so you don't have to sweep, so you don't have to rake the droppings up. You don't need a bag to pick up the droppings. It's sort of natural organic fertilizer that falls back into between the grass blades. It's actually a very good thing, folks, to do it that way. And in this hot weather, you shouldn't cut the grass more than once every 2 or 3 weeks.
That's right.
And let the grass grow taller to shade itself so it doesn't all brown out. That way, also, you don't have to water every day. You don't have to water, and so you're saving on your water bill. Oh, I know. Everybody loves that golf course grass, and the whole society is paying for that. My point is selective enforcement is not a bad idea unless it's like 3 miles an hour over the traffic limit, or 15 even.
Or 15?
Well,
it depends. It depends.
No, the usual place that they swoop down on speeders is 15 over whatever the posted limit is.
And the freeway, but not in a residential area.
But not Dearborn Heights. Well, they're 3 or 4 over, and they got that radar in you. I know that they swoop down. I've gotten tickets myself after 40 years in this area driving on Ford Road. I know how they enforce at Dearborn mm-hmm. Heights, and they are tense. They are, the slightest variance, they'll swoop down on you and get those big tickets issued. So,
but you agree within a neighborhood, 25 is, if you go over 25, it does take longer.
It's dangerous.
Well, the point is, if a kid is right behind the car, little kid, or a tree or something, and you're driving along the curb, they can step out at even 10 miles an hour, you're going to smash into them. So
right.
25 is just arbitrary. Sure. The faster you go, the less time you have to stop.
Response time, sure.
But any speed is actually a hazard there. In a way, the neighborhood should have been designed that we have like community parking garages or parking lots, and then you walk to your house from there.
Mm-hmm.
Collective parking facilities so that you never have to drive down a residential street and therefore endanger kids. But nobody's ever thought of that.
Well, that's becoming more
unless
and more
you live
common.
In a condo or
right.
an apartment.
Yeah. Exactly. Yeah. I see that a lot in Arizona and in Florida.
These are like mixed use residential communities of the future where it saves on energy. And I don't like an apartment, I don't like a condo, but there's ways of designing the home so that they are sharing walls, they're sharing roofs. They're sharing, air conditioning and heating to economize. And the parking lots are out and about around it, okay, which means that no kids are going to be killed unless they wander into the parking lot.
with all the lead foots.
Yeah. Okay. So we have word that Joanne is on her way, but there's a delay today. And have to find out about that, Joanne, if you're in your car already. Just drive carefully, all right? We did find out that Michigan Avenue is now open in West Dearborn.
It's
it
gorgeous.
Was ahead of schedule, and
way
they
ahead.
Did a great job, The workers are to be commended for getting their ahead of schedule. It was open last week. And
I was doing 60 down there. No, I'm just kidding.
Yeah.
Wide open.
You had something on your list. I don't mean, I hope I'm not talking out here, a place here, but you were talking about something where they're raising the rates at the libraries?
Yep. Yep.
In last Sunday's Press and Guide.
Kind of bad news
for
Dennis. Yeah.
Oh.
Dennis,
have you had an experience with that?
Well, speaking the third person, Dennis is notorious for... Do you guys know that when I went to get my transcripts from another college to transfer here, I couldn't because I had a 20-year-old overdue library book? I swear. The book was called The Western Approach to Zen, and I found it. I did.
I'm not sure we're allowed to have criminals on the air.
No, I returned the book, and it's fine. All yeah, right. Everything's fine now. I cleared my name.
Didn't do
it's
jail.
Reformed.
Didn't do jail time anyway.
No.
Okay. Well, and my comment here is the Dearborn Library Commission recently voted to increase overdue fines to 25 cents per day per item.
Oh, that would have got me back.
This increase includes books, audiobooks, compact discs, magazines, and instructional DVDs and videos. There's a lot available at your friendly public library here in Dearborn, I want you to know, or at least at the main library anyway. Overdue fines for entertainment videos and DVDs remains, which I mean they didn't raise it, above $2 a day. And give me a break. 20